tracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
And good evening once again. Welcome to this week's edition of Inside Motorsport. Craig Gravel, he said we've heard his voice enough over recent weeks. Gee, he only just got back from America. Peter Norton, do you think he said enough?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's a real bonus for listeners that we'll have a little less of Craig this week.
But then again, so he's pre-recorded all the interviews, so we're going to hear during interviews as Craig. So that's what he does to us. Typical, isn't it? Anyhow, we've got motorsport all over the place this weekend. And in particular, there's all sorts of things happening all around the world. But of course, next weekend, we have the FIA 1000 up at Bathurst. And joining us on the line now is Kmart Racing Team driver Greg Murphy. Greg, you must be looking forward to getting back up to the mountain to, as they say, defend your title up there.
Yeah, we, see Richard and myself, can't wait. It's always a build-up. We go through the same thing every year, and it's worthy of it because it's such a great race. And it's getting bigger and better and more competitive every year we go there. And this year's just going to be fantastic.
Now, of course, your team has done reasonably well during the sprint races, but where you've really come into your own is during most of those sort of longer races, endurance races. It seems to be sort of something you two guys specialise in, is those long-distance events.
Yeah, it's not the plan. It's not our plan at all. It's not the team's plan. We go out in all the sprint races to win them, obviously, as much as anyone else. But the team, we're still struggling a little bit to get the car working at its best in the sprint format. And I mean, in those races you've got to qualify at the front of the field, and our qualifying performance is probably the reason why we haven't been at the front and winning more sprint races, because in the long distance races it's not so important where you qualify, it's how you race and obviously how the pit stops go and strategy. And our strategies, pit stops, the team, when they do the pit stops, do an unbelievably good job, and we certainly make up for it in endurance races.
Do you think it's mainly something in the setup of the cars for qualifying, you don't get the best out of them, or is it just you're not into that sort of thing?
No, we Steve and I enjoy qualifying and we put in just as much as everyone else, but the cars we haven't got quite on top of it enough yet. We're lacking in a couple of areas. The cars are always good in race speed. We've always got good race speed, but to win these races, the short 20-minute races, you have to be at the front because you just don't get a chance to be able to pass the people to make your way up, say, from 15th or 16th into the top five. So, if you're out of it in a small amount, it takes a lot of people to fall off the front of you to get up the front.
Now, this year, naturally enough, at Bathurst, it looks like it's going to be probably one of the strongest for Bathurst we've seen for quite some time. Yeah. The Falcons are coming on speed. You've got people like Holden Racing Team, Gary Rogers Motorsport and so on. They're all out there, particularly like those two teams, you know, to try and get the championship, because you've got people like Steve Rich himself who are going to be the real spoilers. But the thing is, though, you're carrying through that good form from last year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Steve and I are hoping we are the spoilers, you know. As long as Holden wins the race, we're not too concerned who it is, as long as it's us. So, we want to get out there and do the job, probably, which we know we can. As you said, there's some Ford teams out there who finally got their act together, and they got some good speed out of the cars. Paul Radice, which is obviously the hot favourite at the moment in the Ford camp to do well, and he's going to be very quick. They've got a lot of horsepower. The Fords are producing good horsepower and are very fast in a straight line. So really, we've got to outdo them with strategy and pit stops and bits and pieces like that.
Now, for this race, man, of course, you get that little bit of front under tray back again. That will probably help you a bit around the mountain.
Well, yeah, maybe a little bit. I mean, it certainly slowed us off a little bit initially when we got it removed. But you know, after doing a bit more testing and bits and pieces, we've probably got it reasonably back to sort of probably where it was before. And the Fords now have got exactly the same under tray as us. So really, there's no parity in our aerodynamics of the cars at all. I mean, they're all exactly the same. The Ford versus Holden, there's no difference in it. And really, we just got to get on with the job and go hard out and race it on the track, and the race is just going to be so tough, and it's going to be very exciting.
Mm. Now, this week as well, we had the announcement of the fact that you're replacing your previous teammate from a few years ago, Craig Lowndes, in the Pinots at the American Le Mans race. Now, of course, for you, you've been to Le Mans in the past. Obviously, the chance to step into a car like the Le Mans prototype must be a real big buzz.
Oh, listen, I'm just stoked about the opportunity to get in there. I've been working on, since I found out about the race, was definitely confirmed to come to Adelaide at the end of this year. I've been working on trying to get a drive in a car in that race. So to finally get something together and be in such a top-line car as the Panels, You know, it's fantastic. It's a great thing. And obviously, the racing around the streets of Adelaide, it's a fantastic street circuit. And by racing there once a year at the Clipsal 500, you know, it's not enough, really. I love racing there. And being back on the Grand Prix circuit, it's just going to be spectacular. These big Le Mans prototypes and bits and pieces are just going to be an awesome sight around there for 6 hours or 1,000 k's.
I'm just thinking back to when you probably last ran on the Le Mans circuit. Just trying to think what you were driving there. Have you driven the V8 there, or have you been the Audi at the time?
On the Grand Prix circuit?
Yeah.
In Adelaide? What was that, actually? That's a good question. Probably a Formula Holden and an Audi, actually.
Yeah.
It would have been, 1996 was the last time we were there, I think, wasn't it? Or 95 or something. So, it would have been a Formula Holden, really, which was suitable at the time.
Mm. And, of course, the thing is, too, that getting back on that Grand Prix circuit, that main straight, the Kerrville Terrace Brabham straight, that's going to be really fast in those Le Mans cars.
Well, you're probably looking around 300k. I mean, they are powerful cars. They're very, very fast. So you're going to expect something around 300 kilometres an hour. I mean, they're basically Formula One cars with bodies on them. I mean, or Indy cars with bodies on them. So very, very different to V8 supercars. The V8 supercar, when we go there, it's just an awesome event. And you know, people love to see the Ford versus Holden racing around the streets of Adelaide. It's just incredible. It's put V8 supercars on the map in Australia, bigger and better than ever before. But this race can be very, very different. Not the same, but should be very spectacular.
Mm. Well, Greg, hopefully we'll be talking to you next weekend with the Kmart Commodore Racing team after the finish of the FI 1000. We'll be down in Adelaide to actually cover the Le Mans event. So I wish you good luck for next weekend, and hopefully we'll catch up with you sometime during the weekend.
I appreciate it. Looking forward to it, and can't wait for next weekend.
Thank you very much, Greg Murphy. Thank you. Yeah, good solid there, Greg Murphy. Always good to talk to. And we'll now move on to some other news from around the nation.
World Series Sprint Cars kicked off last night in Newcastle, and after 33 starts, Robbie Farr has broken the drought to pick up his first A-feature win. And John Evans joins us on the line now. And John, about time. Robbie Farr has been one of the great drivers in midgets and sprint cars for a number of years now, and making this breakthrough in front of a big crowd, and in fact the pretty tough field, is a great way to do it.
Yes, Craig, that's true. Robbie admitted, however, there was some fortune on his part, because there was a crash 10 laps into the race which effectively eliminated the three leading contenders in the race, and Robbie inherited the race lead and went on to score his career first World Series win.
He was not doing it easily, with Danny Smith and Brooke Tatnall right on his hammer. Of course, Smith and Tatnall just back from a interesting season they both enjoyed in the States.
That's correct. Brooke was actually the story of the race, becoming involved in the crash that eliminated Max Dunsey and Kerry Madsen, and the team was able to effect repairs to the Shell Helix Avenger. He went to the rear of the field and proceeded to storm back up through an admittedly depleted number of cars and finished in an amazing third place.
Now, for Dunsey, he was the quickest man on the day, and also Kerry Madsen picked up the Dash Award.
That's right. Kerry set a new record time, eclipsing Gary Rush's record in the Dash at Newcastle, and he began the feature race in the lead and was being caught by Dunsey, who in turn was being caught by Tatnall at the time the incident occurred, when they closed on the back markers to lap them. Grant Tunks came off the berm and hit Victoria and Steve Knight. They spun and directly in the path of the three leaders, who couldn't avoid them.
It sounds like it was a very exciting night. Kicking off on the East Coast, this is a good kick for the World Series Sprint Cup. How did the fans come to it?
Yes, the good thing last night, it was also live on 4 hours of D7 television, and the same applies next weekend when round two occurs at Parramatta City Raceway.
All right then. Well, John, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you. Of course, John Evans, the editor-in-chief of Oval Express magazine, and everyone has been saying you've done a great job with number one. When will we see the second edition out?
Second edition is on the stands on the 1st of December. We really have some fantastic stories in that. The cover story, which is a really heartwarming story about Shane Cricky's fight against cancer. It's something everybody would really be interested in reading.
All right then, John. I look forward to talking to you next weekend on the show, of course, after the Parramatta round of the World Series Sprint Cars with the news. Robbie Farr picks up victory number one in round one.
Thanks very much, Craig.
And of course, the news this week finally confirmed that Craig Lowndes will be leaving the Holden Racing team at the end of this season. And, of course, that's the reason why Greg Murphy is actually staying in the Pinoz American Le Mans Series sports car for the race down there in Adelaide at the end of the year, joining Mark Noski. Of course, the situation being that originally Craig was given permission to race in Adelaide, but now that's changed. And, of course, his contract runs out on December 31st, and the present team isn't going to give him permission to do that. And, of course, you read through the matter in press currently, and it says, oh, he had the permission, he doesn't have permission. They expected letters, they didn't expect letters. But anyhow, where he ends up, who will know? And of course, one of the key things, of course, with Craig Lowndes is the fact that he does have a very marketable and saleable image out on the racetrack. And of course, Peter, you've got some news from America this week in that particular vein of just how marketable or unmarketable somebody's driving image can be on the track.
Yes, that's right. Really, what you're selling to your sponsors is image, reputation, and all of that. And here's a little story of where that relationship has gone a little sour. We think it's a Busch driver, the story just says, a NASCAR driver, we guess in the Busch series, whose on-track altercations resulted in at least three crashes, has allegedly tarnished his sponsor's image, and the company wants its money back. AT&T, who are based in the US, of course, have filed a lawsuit in Denver's federal court against driver Mike Borkowski and his Ohio marketing company. The action alleges that company was left black and blue by the driver's conduct and seeks return of $600,000 in sponsorship. The breach of contract suit alleges that Borkowski and the company broke the terms of their sponsorship agreement when Borkowski was involved in several nationally televised altercations. The suit says that Borkowski's behaviour in the Busch 200 at New Hampshire International Speedway was condemned by members of the media and prompted his release from Bill Davis Racing after competing in just eight of the races for the season. AT&T cited a May 13 incident in which Borkowski recklessly steered his AT&T-sponsored Pontiac into a car driven by Lyndon Amick, and in a second altercation the same day, the suit said that Borkowski clipped Jason Jarrett's car, sending it into the wall. The crashes, including Borkowski's own crash on the final lap of the May 13 race, caused extensive damage to AT&T, to the 18 car, and Borkowski was roundly criticised by race officials, television commentators and fellow drivers. So yes, he really has performed poorly, but more of interest is how that reflects on his sponsor.
Mm.
Is it a breach of contract?
Well, who knows? This is the way these things go. It's very, very tricky to tell. And of course, this is the thing. It really is a case of the importance of that the driver with their on-track performance providing the right sort of image for the sponsor. And I think this is the thing that, you know, if you look at the top drivers over the years, one of the things the sponsors have always been happy about with the driver is, one, them getting results, but also their fairness and good sportsmanship on the track, and also how they handle the fans.
Yes, that's right. Really, what you're selling is to a sponsor, you will benefit from my reputation. So I guess it's breach of contract when your reputation is not what you've represented it to be. And it really comes back to it is now a very big business. And the NASCAR drivers in particular are so very careful about the image that they portray. There's so much money involved. We go back quite a few months where Jeff Gordon and Tony Stewart had a bit of a slaying match, or even the year before, whereas Jeff Gordon and Dale Jarrett, they very swiftly follow up with some formal apologies, particularly if bad language was involved, trying to reinforce the family values and all those things that the sponsors want.
Mm. Of course, the other news, of course, in V8 Supercar news this week, with Craig Lowndes sort of going from Holden Racing Team, the question has then become, who will replace him at Holden Racing Team? We have the news this week that Marcus Ambrose has signed with Stone Brothers to replace Craig Baird. David Bernard has signed with Stone Brothers, and of course he's going supposedly into the Caltex Havilland car, which means where does Tony Longhurst end up in all this? You then have, of course, where will Craig go? They've got Gibson Motorsport as one option, going to a second car with Minor Team Racing with Mark Larkin, going to a new team with Prancing Horse Mark Noski, third car with Dick Johnson Racing with a big injection of more money, Ford Ticket Racing, there's a question mark there because the fact is the guy who's now managing Craig, which is Noel Watson, had previously been with Ford Ticket Racing, left there with a bit of a dark cloud and bad vibes, as they say. Castrol Perkins? Don't know. Stone Brothers, well, that's closed off. And, of course, Kmart Racing, they've confirmed Greg Murphy and Stephen Richards are their drivers next year, and that No Way Jose. I suppose if enough dollars are waived by sponsors in their face, they could probably do something.
Yeah, the Cashcroll Racing one is an interesting one. If Larry won at Bathurst, would that prompt him to retire? Most of the high-profile retirements is normally finishes with a victory tour. They have a whole year of marketing effort and cashing in all of the souvenirs before they actually do retire. So it would be a little bit unconventional, but Larry's like that. He could possibly retire on the spot at Bathurst.
That's a possibility, but then again, they have released the videotape of Larry's endurance racing epics over the years, so, you know, like the final high-profile thing, but then again, who knows? I think we're on another story.
Next weekend, of course, with all the racing on at Bathurst, we cannot forget the GTP and Nations Cup events. Chris Nixon, it is going to be another fantastic showing, full grids once again, and I believe Nations Cup and GTP split up in two because of the entry size.
Well, they've been split up all year, of course, with the advent of the new GTP Nations Cup Series in 2000. What it means is that the GT production cars retain the annual Bathurst 3-hour showroom showdown, Craig, and we will also have three races for the GTP Nations Cup cars.
It is going to make for a little bit of a changing of the guard, because for so long, Fitzgerald, Richards, the names that have been dominant in Nations Cup this year have been the ones to shine at the 3-hour showdown. So it is going to mean that we're going to see some new names up at the front on the television coverage and for the fans that are up on the hill.
You're quite right. The 3-hour showroom showdown on the Saturday afternoon, it starts at 12:45, really is one of the highlights of the Bathurst weekend, although the FAI 1000 itself is undoubtedly the highlight. There are many people who are keen to see how these shopping trolleys, if you like, go on 3 hours around Mount Panorama. And as you said, a lot of newcomers, because the GTP Nations Cup category has been created out of what was Class A from last year, they've moved on into their own series, and we now have cars like the Mazda RX-7, the Mitsubishi Evo 5, the Subaru WRX STI, the Holden HSV Commodores, now fighting out for the outright battle. So, in a sense, Craig, it has come back very much, I think, to the origins of Bathurst itself. In the early days of Bathurst, of course, it was a competition for series production cars, not for modified cars, and that's what we're going to see racing around next Saturday afternoon.
Yes, and with Nations Cup now out the way, a lot of people didn't get an opportunity to see how close the racing in B, C, D, and all the other classes in GTP were, because Mark King, who I think is the defending champion of his class at Bathurst, has for the last 2 years won that class by less than a half a car length on both occasions, which means this year he's going to be running less than a half a car length in front of, we hope, the competitor for the outright win of the 3-hour race.
You're absolutely right. The class championship throughout this season, which concluded at Sandown a few weeks ago, has been sensational. It's really been some of the best racing of the year in any category, I believe. All the classes have battled heavily among themselves. So they come for this one-off non-championship race at Bathurst in the high-performance class, which will feature those cars I just mentioned, the Evo 5s, the Subarus, the Holden HSVs, and so on. Class B, which is the sports touring class, it will be very interesting this year because there's quite a strong entry from the Honda Integra Type R coupes. They've proved very successful this year. There's a Celica in there and a couple of other cars, Toyota MR2. That'll be great. We look at the V8 touring car class, 5-litre Holden Commodore SS's, not the 5.7 that has been introduced, that wasn't eligible this year, against the AU2 Falcon XR8s. In Class D, we see the Falcon XR6 against the six-cylinder Toyota Camry Touring and a couple of the Magna 3.5-litre Sports. And then down in Class E, even the Ripley's, we've got a flying squad of Suzuki GTIs, a Peugeot 306, and the Proton Satri GTI of Cosi Calasidis. So right through the field, there's going to be some entertaining races. And if you thought that Class A cars are going to be in front, followed by Class B, followed by Class C, followed by Class D and E, you'll be surprised, I think, to see how well some of these cars in the lower classes, so-called, perform.
Yes, and the lower classes, as I've said, have had some great battles which we hadn't had the opportunity to enjoy, because really the big names were in the Class A cars, and certainly they were the cars that everyone did like to look at. But now we're going to see the cars that more people would have access to, because we don't all have $100,000 for the Porsches and Ferraris and the like, and so we can actually enjoy some racing in cars that, as you said at the beginning, used to do this sort of thing on the mountain. The other thing we might just talk about before we talk about the Nations Cup battle, which the three races there are going to have a different focus over the endurance racing, but is, I think it's Wednesday night, the Cars and Stars of the GTP and Nations Cup will be at the Sydney Motor Show.
That'll be on the Wednesday night after the Sydney, after the after Bathurst. There will be an appearance by GTP cars and drivers, as you say, at the Sydney International Motor Show, in the foyer of the Motor Show. You'll be able to come along and have a look at probably up to a dozen of some of our best cars and to meet the drivers.
And with any luck, you might be able to sample a few Bathurst winners, which will look great on the stand.
You're absolutely right. Well, there's going to be a few. My bet for the 3 hour is an outside chance of the Commodores. They're going to be the pace setters for sure, but I think that the rumour seems to be that reliability will be tough on them. They're a big, heavy car, of course, with big, heavy V8s in them. So if it's not the Commodore, it's got to come down to either one of the Evo 5s or one of the Subarus, I believe. There are a couple of new cars in there, two of the new Nissan 200SX Spec R coupes, and one Honda S2000 being driven by Greg Crick. On paper, that would be a pretty good combination, but I have to tell you, I saw that car in the workshop in Brisbane only yesterday, and the guys are still working flat out on it, so it will be a virgin when it hits the track on Thursday.
All right, then. And Chris, of course, in the GT Nations Cup, that race there, obviously, we're going to actually see the Maserati and the Ferrari have an opportunity to really stretch out their legs.
Well, I'm not sure whether the Maserati is going to be there, but certainly we're going to have three Ferraris at this stage, three of the F360 Bedina Challenge cars, $350,000 each, Craig. They are fantastic cars to look at, fantastic to hear when they're on full song, and I think that they're just going to be fabulous to watch across the top of the mountain. We will have the Lamborghini Diablo SBR of Paul Stogle. That's a strong tip for Bathurst because it's got enormously strong horsepower and torque from its 5.7-litre rear-mounted V12. We have five Dodge Vipers, and don't forget that a Dodge Viper was on pole last year, even though it didn't start the race. And something like six Porsche 911 GT3s, including the car driven by the new champion of Nations Cup, Jim Richards. So 22 cars in GTP Nations Cup at this stage, 55 in the 3 hour Bathurst Showroom Showdown.
Yeah, a great field, and as we always enjoy, is a start where cars have to come from around the around Murray's Corner. That always makes for exciting racing as well.
It will be fabulous. The GTP Nations Cup cars have got a race on Friday afternoon at 25 minutes past 5. On Saturday, they have a reverse grid race at 9:20 a.m. Now, that's going to be really something, because if ever you were going to have a reverse grid race at a track, I think Bathurst is one to have it at. There's plenty of room out there, so the back markers can come through, or the front runners can come through from the back of the grid, hopefully without too much drama, but plenty of interest. And then thirdly, a further race on Sunday morning at 10 minutes to 8 prior to the festivities beginning for the FAO 1000.
Well, Chris, we look forward to all the action. Of course, Channel 10 bringing us to us live and exclusive, as they like to say, and also for the people who enjoy the run up the mountain, they'll also be able to, whilst the cars aren't on the track, catch up with the latest edition of course, the GTP magazine.
Thank you very much, Craig.
Thanks very much, Chris Nixon. And joining us now is Paul Marinelli from Rally Australia over there in Perth. And it was a pretty exciting finish to another excellent event there.
It certainly was, Peter. Thank you. And Tommy Mackinnon, once again, his third Telstra Rally Australia victory and done in superb style in the Mitsubishi Lancer Evo. 5.5 seconds ahead of Marcus Gronholm from the Peugeot World Rally Championship team in the Peugeot 206. Gronholm has been absolutely incredible this season. And he did dominate the first day. Then, of course, Burns dominated the second day. And then Mackinnon, on the day that it meant business, not only dominated, but he had a 10-second penalty given to him for jumping a start in one of the last stages, the forest stages, yesterday. And even with that penalty, he's managed to take the advantage of being the third car out rather than the first and built that up to a 5.5-second buffer by the end of today's fourth and last stage of the 21 stages that made up Rally Australia.
Yes, it sounds like it was a real event of cat and mouse. No one really wanting to lead the event, or definitely didn't want to be first on the road.
Absolutely right, Peter. It was the rally that nobody wanted to lead. It was quite funny. Juha Kankinen found himself in the lead after the first day, and it was quite extraordinary because you could tell that all he was doing was driving at his normal pace, which, of course, is frighteningly quick. But the guys at the front decided that they'd back off, and to the misfortune of Carlos Sainz and Louis Moya from Spain and the Ford Focus, they were disqualified for it because they stopped in a yellow zone and a no-stop zone to try and get themselves down the grid. So it shows that what can happen is certainly not what you anticipate when you're trying to make up time.
That's right, and it's been suggested that the jump start from Mackinnon, but also a flat tyre from someone else, was all part of the games to get that prize third position on the road.
Yeah, that's right. Mackinnon's jump start, I dare say, was tactics, and very, very, very good tactics when you think about it, because of the way it worked out. And also with Richard Burns' mystery flat tyre, let's just call it a mystery, as he rolled out onto the service stage just before today's first stage, was like, yes, unfortunate, but it did push him back a little and pushed Gronholm up at the very last minute into the second spot. So it was like, into the first spot, because Mackinnon had been dropped down to third with his 10-second penalty. So I don't know, the tactics, you could say on one hand, look, it's very clever of the guys to work out how they're going to best take advantage of the conditions and so forth, all the part of it, or you could say, is this all about going as fast as you possibly can in every stage? So for me, I think rallying is all about that, and I hope that they do go back to that and give the drivers the chance to pick where they start in terms of from fastest to slowest, drawing a number out of a hat, like we did here last year. The FIA outlawed that this year. That's why that didn't happen. And that's why you had drivers slowing down at the end of stages. But when they pick where they start, they've got no choice but to go as hard as they possibly can.
Yes, that's right. It's the fans would much prefer to see the flat-out racing rather than the games of cat and mouse. And this isn't the only rally that the games come into it, particularly the Swedish rally with the snow and ice.
Yes, that's right. Anywhere where you've got an absolute disadvantage in terms of the track condition, such as the snow and the ice in Finland, and then, like you mentioned, the other events. But having said that, the fans were treated to some very, very fast action over the last 3 days, particularly today's last four stages, and during some of the mid-stages where you saw Richard Burns just catching up and taking the lead yesterday. It was just exceptional to watch just how hard he was going in the Subaru Impreza. And he's got a world championship that he desperately wants, but it's been done some harm now, with Gronholm finishing in second place. That's further extended his championship lead to 54 points. And I dare say, I do know for a fact that in Great Britain in 2 weeks' time, and the Network Q rally, if he finishes fourth or better, he will win the title, Gronholm. It'll be his first title, and an exceptional result for the revamped Peugeot team.
Yes, that's right. But the man of the moment is Tommy Mackinnon. I understand you caught up to him just shortly after the final stage today.
That's right. That's Tommy Mackinnon straight out of the car when he arrived at the finish of the Michelin Special TV stage today.
Yes, and of course there were a lot of Australians racing there today as well. And how did they fare?
Well, we must say Canberra driver, of course, Neil Tate. What would a rally be without him? Neil Bates and Cole Taylor in the Toyota Corolla WRC, 11th overall. I think that was absolutely superb. Five-time Australian rally champion, Possum Bourne, or he's a Kiwi, but we'll include him in this category, had 8th overall, and that, again, a brilliant effort. Factory teams behind him, such as the Peugeot of Paniti, the Seat of Oriol and Girardet, Didier Oriol and Girardet. A great effort by him. Fantastically, his tactics throughout the rally were brilliant. He wanted to win the Australian Manufacturers Championship for Subaru, and he did that, and he did it in fine form. Had he not had the pressure to make sure they'd won that, I wouldn't be surprised if he'd be up in fifth or sixth. I think he was being fairly conservative throughout the rally until the end, with a lot of high flying. Ed Ordinski in 17th, he's had a horrible rally. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong, and he still managed to bring it home fourth in the Group N class and 17th overall. Dean Herridge from Western Australia, the Subaru Impreza, this guy was brilliant all weekend. He has just proven that he's coming of age in the Group N category. Eighth in the Group N category, 21st overall. I think it was a great job. Spencer Lowndes, 22nd, his Mitsubishi Lancer Evo, didn't put a foot wrong. And down the order we see Stone, Thompson, Martin, Walk, excuse me for not knowing these gentlemen's first names, Hills and Dines. That's Lady Dines in the Mitsubishi. I saw her. She had a crash at Langley Park on the second night of the Super Stage, but came out of that okay and continued on to finish 35th. So they're the top-placed Australians.
One of the names you haven't mentioned there is Cody Crocker, who was one of the great hopes for Australia, and potentially into the future he might get onto the World Championship Circus. How did he fare?
Yeah, and someone else I just realised I haven't mentioned is Michael Guest. I'm just going to go down the order now and see where he ended up. Yeah, I'll go back to that. Cody Crocker was one of our first retirements on the first day, which was very, very unfortunate. 32 retirements as I speak to you, and I wouldn't be surprised if we get a listing of some more. It's still fairly early here in Perth. It's right on 3:30, and I'm looking down the order now trying to find Michael Guest, because he wasn't too far down the order last time I checked, but yes, something must have happened. Certainly disappeared from my rundown now, which takes us down to the top 36 competitors.
Yes, it sounds like a bit of bad luck there for Michael Guest.
Very unfortunate.
But hopefully he can put some things together ready for next year as well.
And as you say, with Cody Crocker, yes, let's hope the opportunity is there for not only him, we know how talented he is, but for all our young rally drivers and general racing drivers in Australia. Events like this do showcase what they can do, and I think anyone's even finished this that deserves a medal, but if you can get in the top 20 in this sort of a classy field, well, you're doing exceptionally well.
Yes, that's right. It sounds like another excellent event there. You talk of Melbourne trying to steal the rally away from you. They're going to have to try awful hard because you keep putting on an excellent show.
Yeah, they certainly do here. Events called WA, everyone involved in Telstra Rally Australia, you really got to take your hat off to how well this event is organised. It's won the best rally in the world twice now. And I come over from Melbourne to help them with it every year, and I am continually amazed. I have to say for this year, the gyrocam on the helicopter, I don't know if you heard about this, Peter, but it was extraordinary. We could see every car in every stage every day. It was an incredible effort. It could be as high as 700 metres up and still zoom right in. You could even see the driver's hands on the steering wheel. That's how incredible this footage was. And, of course, it helped in terms of safety. It helped in catching out Carlos Sainz, stopping where he shouldn't have. It helped in the wrong way in that instance. But it was just incredible. And you know, hats off to the Australians and internationals involved in making this event what it is. Australians are just brilliant at any sporting event. We've proved that this year without a doubt.
Yes, that's right. So another excellent event from Rally Australia. Paul Marinelli, thank you very much.
Thank you, Pete.
Yeah, Paul Marinelli there over with Rally Australia over in Western Australia. And, of course, lots of racing going on around the nation as well. The Super Tours were running over at Wakefield Park. They actually showed that on Channel 7 today between 12 and 2, and actually some good coverage from Wakefield Park. But this weekend they moved down to Mallalar in South Australia. And this was actually going to be a quite interesting meeting because they had 101 different things going on. One of them, of course, was a head-to-head race with Paul Morris and John Henderson in the Mitsubishi Mirage Series, and that provides some very interesting results. Actually, we're trying to get hold of our man Dave Langfield over in South Australia covering this, because things, again, the time difference between the East Coast and the central time zones of Australia means we're always sort of catching up along the way as we go along. But as always, it appears that Paul Morris is the man is always the one that's hard to beat. As we heard yesterday, he took pole position for both races, and of course that made things well and truly open. And of course, now joining us from Malawi over there, David Langfield. Dave, once again, we believe it's that man Morris who had it over everybody.
Yeah, basically Paul's been dominant in the both the Super Touring and the Mitsubishi Mirage Series here this weekend, taking pole position for the qualifying for the Super Tourers with, basically, I'll tell you what he did. Four laps on Saturday morning to set the pole position time. Didn't even practice Friday according to the timesheets. Five laps during Saturday morning practice to set the car up. Four laps to set pole on Saturday morning for the first race, and then three laps, basically he did an out lap, a flying lap, and then a cool down lap for the second qualifying session, parked in pit lane and sat there for the rest of the session while everyone else chased him, and he was still almost half a second ahead of John Henderson in second place, and was actually almost 1.5 seconds ahead of the pack in qualifying, first qualifying session after only racing four laps.
Mm. And of course for Paul Morris, he certainly knows how to get that BMW flying, and of course he did that as well in the races today.
Oh, look, led from both starts, basically established a large early lead in race one. Henderson Hills duelled early with Henderson taking second from Hills early on. Morris basically walked away with that one. It was quite a dominant performance. Some good battles down through the field. Alan Gert basically bogged it down right at the start. He was somewhere in the, fourth place he started the first race from. Bogged it down, heaps of wheel spin, was almost last at the first corner and then did a big charge up through the field, so that was a bit of fun for him. Some good racing between the future tourers as well, with young James Brock actually getting in there and having a bit of a race as well. Excuse me. The hay fever is actually, this one thing that's up here today, this is the first dry Super Touring race I've been to for a while actually, with Malawi bathed in sunshine today after some early morning cloud. So quite a departure from what we've seen here in the past, also at Bathurst last year for me. So the hay fever's taken its toll today. So basically, some great weather. Crowd's very, very down here. There's hardly, you know, without playing the event down, really very few people turned up to this, and yet there was a reasonable amount of promotion for it. But again, we saw some great racing.
Mm. Now, Paul Morris as well won the second race. This time it was Peter Hills who came in second.
Yeah, just going the results for that, mate. Race two. Yeah, Hillsy came in second. Morris actually didn't have it all his own way in race two. He got a good start. Henderson harried him like crazy. He was basically on his tail for the first couple of laps and probably up to a third of the race distance before, unfortunately, at turn seven, which is off a very long straight into a right-hand turn into the S's, Henderson outbraked himself and ended up off in the grass. And Morris basically just walked away with it from there.
Mm. Well, we actually were able to catch up with Paul Morris a little bit earlier on, and Paul Morris had a few things to say about his opportunity in equaling Jim Richards' record in taking the most number of Super Touring wins.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with that, for sure.
It has been an interesting season with the move to the Summer Series, Channel 7 today televising your races, and a great package they put together too, which you probably didn't have the benefit of seeing.
No, I haven't seen it, but it should be some good TV there, and I've already had a few phone calls from a few friends to say it looked pretty good, so the summer thing is good too. We had a good crowd here at Malawi, and it's a lot more pleasant going to the racetrack in the freezing cold.
Yeah, I can believe that. And now with the success of Wakefield Park and with Malala, it does seem that the crowds are really warming to this idea of the Summer Series, and perhaps this could be the biggest boom for the BRC Gases Championship in a number of years.
Yeah, it's a lot better, and it's a lot more user-friendly. You don't have to sit around in the freezing cold watching the car races. You can relax and enjoy yourself and have a good day out.
Paul, the championship now, of course, this race will be televised next weekend, next Sunday on Channel 7, but for yourself, when's the next run? Of course, Bathurst next weekend for the V8 Supercar.
Yeah, look, our team headed off for there this morning, and all the preparation's gone well, and we've made some really good progress of the big cab Commodore over the last month or so, and we've never had been.
I believe, I think Macau's on this weekend as well.
Yeah, Macau, that's disappointing. It's on next weekend, the same weekend as Bathurst, and I was scheduled to drive one of the factory BMW super production cars there, but the clash of dates has just unfortunately not allowed me to do that. But with the move from Bathurst back to October next year, I'll be looking forward to heading back to Macau.
Well, we know one thing's for sure. Kev, Big Kev, will be excited about seeing you on the mountain, as will a lot of other people, and we wish you all the best for that, and congratulations on this weekend.
Thanks.
Yeah, good to see Paul Morris. Now, of course, Paul Morris and John Henderson also today were doing a bit of driving outside their usual cars. They got into the Mitsubishi Mirages as well.
Yes, Colin, that was what we were dubbing here, the grudge match between John Henderson and Paul Morris. I believe Henderson's allegedly made the comment that, well, Paul's advantage lies in his car, so somebody decided to put them in equal cars and see how they went. Morris actually lost out in qualifying to Henderson. It was Warren Luff from pole, Henderson second and Morris third, so Henderson drew first blood there. Morris actually, in the first race itself, was leading by the end of flat one. Luff up to second and Henderson third, so first points there to Morris, although for the actual race results themselves for the Mitsubishi Mirage Series, Morris and both Morris and Henderson don't actually count for the point score, so they were actually not part of it. So when you guys give the actual proper results, they'll actually, you know, from points point of view, they don't factor into it.
Mm. Yes, actually looking at it, I saw the results for the second race that they ran with the Mitsubishi Mirages. In the second race, they reversed it with John Henderson finishing in first, with Warren Luff in second and Paul Morris in third, so it sort of flipped them around.
Yeah, well, that was an interesting one there, because Morris was leading for a lot of that. He lost the start after having, I think, started off the front row, and then sat on Luff's rear for several laps. Then he slowed down and Henderson caught him, and then mid-race, Luff understeered into the final turn with Morris right on his bumper all the way through the start-finish straight. He actually hit Luff into turn one, and Luff was called into question as to whether he cut the corner, because he cut a huge lot of the second corner complex off. And there were a few more pips and barges, and by the time they got round to my part of the track again, Henderson was in front and managed to get the win. So how that all panned out eventually from the stewards, I don't know, but it was certainly exciting racing, and hopefully we'll be seeing that on TV in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay, well, that's good. Yeah, actually, I believe it's next weekend. They're actually turning around much quicker than what they have in the past.
No, it's good.
So some good racing there at Malawi today.
Oh, definitely. Commodore Cups as well. The second race there was actually red flagged. Jagerson from pole actually hit the wall on turn one and red flagged it, so it was a bit of biffo there. But that put a delay on the program, but they managed to catch up quite well. So you guys can get the results there. I haven't actually been issued with the results from that one. Mm-hmm. Some interesting items out of the weekend. Peter Brock put his backside back in a race car on Friday to help young James set up problems for his new VT Commodore. I've heard figures quoted around that $120,000 mark for that vehicle was the amount of money put into it. So not cheap, but then not as much as running the current V8 supercars either. So it's an alternative there for those on a bit lesser budget.
Mm.
And obviously set tongues wagging with TV apparently doing about four or five laps of the circuit, and all the TV media were clamouring over here on the news on Friday night. Rumours about Peter making a comeback next week at Mount Panorama and all sorts of stuff going on. So they won't leave him alone. It's quite amusing, but no actual factual results there, but again, a good story that comes out of that sort of stuff. Jim Cornish also, I don't know if you guys have announced it, as I spoke to Colin last night, Jim Cornish and Jamie Wall to race the Pilbeam sports prototype at Le Mans this New Year's Eve. Jim, I spoke to on Saturday afternoon, made the comment that us testing the Pilbeam last week in England, he said, gee, the Super Terra Honda, he said, she was so slow. He said, you're going to the back straight of Malala, and he said, and you're like looking for another gear, come on, this thing's so slow. So he's been used to the big fast sports prototype, and it's a big wide car. It's basically like an open wheeler with just, wheel arches over it, and he's just loving it. He's looking forward to it. The car actually arrives here, he said, on December 19th, and I said, well, you're coming out to test it here or something, thinking, well, there's a good photo opportunity, but apparently they'll be shaking it down in the practice session on the Friday at Le Mans. So that's one to watch. Could have some more local talent actually competing in the big league there.
Mm. Well, Dave, thanks very much for your coverage today from Malawi for the last round of the BOC Gases Australian Super Touring Championship. And we'll probably catch up over the next few weeks as other things that develop over there in South Australia.
Of course, anything comes to light, we'll keep you posted.
Thank you very much, Dave Langfield.
Thank you.
Next weekend, the motor show starts down there in Sydney. The International Motor Show will be releasing a number of new cars. First time ever seen anywhere in the world, Mark Matho. That's exciting because the Sydney International Motor Show has been striving for some time to get themselves the world-class recognition that it already holds Australia-wide.
Oh, that's right. No, the Sydney Motor Show has become, you know, probably the most important motor show in the Southern Hemisphere now, and it's definitely on the motor show map. And you can see that, by the way, that, you know, a number of cars which were shown for the first time at the Paris Motor Show only a month ago have made their way down under for the Sydney Motor Show. So, you know, things like the new Citroen C5 and the brand new Honda Civic, which made its debut in Paris, is of course making its debut in Sydney, and you know, a number of other vehicles as well.
What everyone who thinks about sporty cars these days thinks is Subaru, and it will be a world exclusive we're going to see in Sydney for Subaru WRX fans.
Well, absolutely, because not only is it the first opportunity for a lot of people to see the very recently released, as in the last week or two, Subaru Impreza range, including the new WRX that everyone's been so excited to see, but in addition, they will be showing for the very first time the Full House World Rally Championship version of that car, the one that Richard Burns will be driving next year. And those of you who have seen sneak photos of that in the last week or so will know it's a sensational-looking car. And so that'll be on the stand, and everyone will have an opportunity to crawl all over it and under it.
As well as that, rumours are abundant whenever a motor show is on about what's going to be there. But the big tip is in Suzuki's showcase.
Well, there is a rumour that Suzuki is going to show a rally version of its new Ignis small car, which it has just released. Now, Suzuki have developed a rally version of the Ignis, we know that. They've developed it for the new Super 1600 category of the World Rally Championship, which has just been announced for next year. And it's quite a hot little thing, and there is a rumour that that's going to be on the stand as well.
It should be an interesting one. Obviously, they're trying to rekindle the passion of the GTI years.
Well, that's right. I think Suzuki realised that the Ignis is a great opportunity for them to get back some of the customers that they've lost over the last few years, and they've got high hopes for that car. It's a good little car as well.
For someone who thinks of the ultimate sports car, of course, that is Ferrari. You'll have the brand new Spider available for people to, well, at least have a look at.
Well, that's right. If not actually buy it, might be a little bit out of your and my price range. But yes, the Spider will be on the stand, and we haven't seen that before. It's an absolutely beautiful car. And, you know, any time that Ferrari is at a motor show, you always get a very large crowd of people gathering around it. Because, let's face it, we don't see them in the street very often every day.
Yes, Ford's Pussycat brand Jaguar are trying to rekindle some of their heyday as well.
Well, absolutely, and the big draw card on the Jaguar stand is the F-Type. Now, that's a concept car which has been developed by Jaguar as a sort of an indication of what the next Jaguar out-and-out sports car might be. It's very much a successor in looks, if not in technology, to the E-Type, and also to the C and D-Types. It owes a lot to, you know, the D-Type racing car of the 1950s of Le Mans fame. And it's a fantastic looking thing, and we fully expect it to be one of the stars of the motor show.
Along with that, you also have Honda, who are bringing along one of BAR's Formula One cars from this season.
Yeah, they bring along a car from the 99 season, but that doesn't make it any less impressive. And so that'll be an opportunity to see the sort of thing that Villeneuve goes to work in every day. And in addition to that, Honda are going to have the Odyssey Pace car, which they wheeled out for the Honda Indy 300 Champ Car race that we saw on the Gold Coast a couple of weekends ago. And that's a very trick-looking piece of machinery that's
you know, had a stripped-out interior and a body kit and a large set of wheels and so on and so forth, and that'll be on the stand as well. One of the fun bits of the motor show is that even I, who supposedly should know everything about the motor show, I don't. There will be a few surprises on the opening day of the motor show, and a lot of people won't know what's on the Ford or the Holden stand until the thin silk is pulled off the cars, as they say. Ford and Holden have promised us that regardless, win, lose or draw, they're going to bring some of their top cars and their top stars to Sydney after Bathurst to feature on the stands on the Monday and the Tuesday night, which of course are V8 Supercar night. That's the theme of those two nights. In addition, we're going to have some of the top rally cars on the Thursday night. We might actually get a couple from Rally Australia if we're very lucky. Wednesday night is GTP and Nations Cup, and Friday night is the Shell Advanced Superbike Championship. The top riders and the top bikes from that will be there as well.
Sounds like there's plenty for everyone. Now, the motor show getting... And, of course, that is the Sydney International Motor Show. And, fellas, an interesting thing there, going up against Bathurst. Now, that wasn't intentional. The motor show is always the teens of October. But it is going to be a struggle, I think, the first weekend being in Sydney.
Yeah, then again, they might be hoping that if somebody wins, they can roll the car back down the mountain and throw it into one of the pavilions with appropriate signage and make some capital of it. And then they'll have the big screen TVs that they usually have at events like that running in the background.
This would be interesting to see if Ford or Holden do put a big screen TV up behind their stand with the risk that either brand may be having an ordinary day.
That's where they then cut to the pre-prepared tape, just giving the where they've had their previous victories.
Yeah, that's it. There's always that handy. Last weekend at Phoenix Speedway, Jeff Burton took what appeared to be an easy victory. He also won the Bush race on the Saturday, and the media caught up to Jeff and asked him, was it really as easy as it looked?
And no, this wasn't an easy day at all. This was a great day for us. We broke a jack in the pits. We just didn't have any luck at all, but it just kept coming for us. And there at the end, I hated to see Rudd have his problem because he was going to be home. We were going to catch him. I don't know if we ever got by him. We were going to catch him. And just heads up to all these guys. They worked really hard. We put a lot of effort into our race program and it's showing. I thought we had the best car today. Obviously, Jeremy was really fast too, but Paige, I got another trophy. That's important. That's two for the weekend. So all those trophies we get are Paige's. So I needed to tell her that. And I'm just proud of these guys. It's great to get Sicko in victory lane. It feels so good for a sponsor to come in. All of our associate sponsors stuck with us. And this is a long time since Sicko's won. It feels really good to get them in victory lane. So proud to be part of Roush Racing. And all of our people just work hard. It's a true team effort.
And the team owner for Jeff Burton, Jack Roush, was also asked by the media, how did it feel after a tough weekend to get one car over the line in front?
Well, I saw Mark out there lumbering around with old tires. I was afraid they might get tangled up, but Mark is better on old tires than he's been all day. But what can you say about Jeff Burton on his flat tracks? I guess being raised in South Boston is where it's at. What do you think?
A couple of weeks ago, Craig caught up with Richard Petty, the NASCAR legend, at Talladega Speedway, and he asked the king of NASCAR, how would he explain NASCAR racing and the Petty family to an outsider who doesn't know much about the sport?
Southern United States, and you know, since then it's kept growing and growing and growing. I retired in '92, and you know, they put on some new racetracks. We went back to California and different deals. We went to New Hampshire. You know, we're getting ready to go to Chicago. We went to St. Louis. You know, all these kind of deals are just growing. Sport is just, you know, the last 4 or 5 years is really just merging and up. It's like one of those deals that's been here, but the general public didn't realize it was here, and now they're starting to realize it.
How did your father get involved in motor racing when he first got the boat?
My father was a big road racer as far as racing down the highway. They always had a old model car with a new model engine in it with big horsepower and all that. I used to race on Saturday night and race for a lot of money. They didn't race for the fun of it. And then once in 1949, when Jeff started doing it, he said, you know, maybe I can make some money at this. So he got into racing on Sunday instead of Saturday night.
Was there ever a time in your life when you didn't think you'd be a race car driver?
You know, when I first started working on the cars when I was like 11 or 12 years old, my big ambition was just to work on the cars. And probably until I was 18 or 19 years old, I never thought that much about driving. I was still interested in working on the cars. And when I got to be 21, then I started driving. So I started from the engineering part of it, working on the race car. And that was my first love. And once I drove, then I working on it because second love. First love was driving.
So racing has come from a sort of rural community now to every major city wants to see you fellas running around a track that they're building brand new for you.
Yep.
What? Has the sport lost anything because of that?
Well, yeah, it's lost its roots, you know what I mean, from that standpoint, but its roots probably wasn't deep enough that, you know, we had to go out and nurture the sport, and that meant going to new venues, going to different places with new people, trying to get new fans. You know, you had 4 or 5 million fans that were there. Now we need another 4 or 5 million to grow the next couple of years, and then we're going to need another 4 or 5 million. So you're going to have to grow your sport. And that's what they're doing now by going to new places. And, you know, we've got the new TV deals coming in next year where it'll be just on regular channel TV, and you won't have to have cable and all the hookups and stuff. So that's going to help grow the sport. Dodge is going to bring their cars back into the sport next year. Right now, we just got Ford, Chevrolet, and Pontiac. All of a sudden, you got Dodge sewed into the mix. That just makes it that much more competitive to get the Dodge people back into the racing swing of things. So all that stuff together is just growing more and more and more.
With Dodge coming back, is that like a coming home for you?
Well, really, yeah, going back to Craft Corporation, you know, we ran Plymouth 59 or 71 or 72, then I ran Dodge for about 10 years before I got into the GM deal. Dodge, as far as race cars, has not been in racing for the last 25 years. So they've got a lot to learn, and we decided we'd go with them because just because what we had 25 years ago don't work now anyway, so we're going to start with a clean sheet of paper and have to sell the cars and the engine. Everybody has to learn together, so it's going to be a heck of an experiment and a heck of a gamble for us. We feel like, you know, maybe we might not be there to begin with, but we feel like after 6 months or a year, we're going to be more competitive than what we are now. In fact, we're going to be winning a bunch of races.
How hard is it for other drivers to come in and drive
a
43 car?
Well, and
the company that you were.
You know, nobody ever does like you would do. That might be a difference between mowing the yard or washing the house, you know. And, but John's done a real good job. John's personality's fit in real good for Pitt Enterprises. You know, he's laid back, low key. You know, if he wins, he's excited about it. If he loses, he don't get too excited about it. And, you know, it's just everyday deal. So he's been really good with us. And, you know, next year, Kyle will move to the 45 car, the Sprint being advertising that car. John will still be with the Curios. And then we've got a new boy coming up to drive the Georgia Pacific. That's another sponsor that will have three Dodges next year. Then we also have a truck in the truck series and probably have a boost car too. So we're overloaded with race cars right now.
You've got a couple of Australian connections. You did some prior testing.
Yeah, we came over. Me and Bobby Hillen came over and ran a 2 or 3 day of tire testing before they ever put the cars on the racetrack. And that was quite a deal. We came down and stayed about a week, and I guess we tested 2 or 3 days. Then roamed all over the country and checked everything out from there. But hey, that was quite an experience for us. And, you know, I've got a little bit of connection with Australia because of boys that worked with us with the Petty driving experience. Barry Graham, you know, was drove race cars in Australia. I got up with him and we started with the Petty driving experience, and he now runs a bunch of that for us. So got a little bit of connection with Australia.
With the NASCAR racing schedule now, and with it back then, I think you were running 200 odd races a year at one stage there.
Not quite. 60-65 races was the most we ever run. Most of our schedule used to be about 45 races, 46 races. Now they got this circuit back up to 36 races, so that's pretty busy.
But it doesn't give you much time off.
Yeah, I have a little bit better chance now because I'm just owner. I don't have to drive and don't have to be at every one of the races. You know, when you were driving, you had to be at every one of them. Now I go to most all of them, but I don't have to. So, you know, we still get to travel all over the world. And it's been a great life for Richard Petty to be able to do what he's done in the race car and then get out and still be involved in racing.
What has been your proudest moment outside of the race car?
just being here, I guess, guys. I'd be seeing some of those wrecks and stuff we was in. Just being here and growing up with sport, I guess, is the proudest deal. You know, it's like I said, it was small when we started, it was big when we ended up, and we just happened to grow along with it. So, it just makes me feel good that what I did for a living all my life, a bunch of people are really enjoying it, still enjoying that part of it.
And the future, of course, you've had the setback this year.
The future still looks good to us. You know, we had Adam coming along, had a 5-year plan, you know, to bring in new blood and new deals with the Dodge. And so we still got the 5-year plan. We just had to plug Buckshot Jones in, basically, for where he's going to drive the 44 car. We sort of plugged him in where Adam was supposed to go. But, you know, we still got a plan. I don't know if it'll work or not, but we had a plan, and we're trying to bring the enterprise back up to the level it was 10, 15 years ago. And so we figured new blood, young blood, was what we're going to take. But we're still on our goat plan. We've got to make sure it works.
Who was the greatest driver you ever drove against?
Yeah, we had a lot of people. We had 41, 42 different drivers drive for us over 30 years. But, I always look at David Pearson. He's won the second most races, but I probably run against him more. So we used to run a little short track, dirt tracks, asphalt track, road courses, super speedways. And he was probably the toughest guy for me to beat ever with. You got a lot of people that's good on big tracks or good on road courses or good on short tracks. But David was good as anybody everywhere they went. So that's why I placed him number one.
Do you, as a driver, did you miss the variety when you used to race on a dirt track, a sand track, an asphalt track, a concrete track?
Oh, that was just a lot of fun. I mean, I was just a racer at heart, loved to drive a race car. I didn't care if it was road course. I didn't care if it went around it backwards. As long as they called it a racetrack, I didn't care what it looked like. So you just go out and try to win the race.
I guess as a car owner, the idea of running on a dirt track, you just go, whoa, that's money. That's money I'm going to be poking.
That would be real bad right now. These boys have never seen dirt track. That would be a real show. I'd like to be a spectator. I wouldn't want to own a race car, but I'd like to be a spectator and watch these guys run on dirt.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and as I said, all the people in Australia too, who have sent good races right to your family for a pretty tough year, and we are looking forward to see you back out up the top again with the Dodgers next
week. All right, we'll be there, and maybe we'll get down and get a chance to check on some sometimes. At least watch us on TV, okay?
Yes, that's Richard Petty. Always has been, always will be the king of NASCAR. And still on NASCAR, of course, the championship is drawing to a close with 2 rounds to go. And overnight, we have the second last round. Steve Park starts on pole, but more importantly, Bobby Labonte can wrap up the championship if he finishes fifth or better, and he's qualified third.
Craig Harris joins us on the line now. And Craig, for yourself in the carsales.com V8 Konica light car, and I don't know what you're supposed to call them now, but... of course, it is a lot tougher for a privateer to go up onto the mountain than, say, Greg Murphy, who we spoke to at the beginning of the program.
It is. We've got a fair amount of catching up to do, I guess. And a lot of these guys have done a lot of laps at Bathurst before, and this is only our second year, but in first time in a brand new AU Falcon. So we're going there with high hopes, but got a bit of catching up to do, as I said.
It is an interesting combination this year with the first year of the V8 Lights coming together with, of course, the regular Supercar Series. How do you think the parity is going to be? Because there is obviously a difference between the equipment.
Oh, there certainly is. But bear in mind, they're only taking the top 8 out of the Konica Series automatically qualified for Bathurst. Everyone from then on has to pre-qualify on the Thursday morning. But yes, I think there's going to be some people, unfortunately, from both the Shell Series and the Konica Series are going to go home disappointed on Friday afternoon, not qualifying.
And it does make for a difference in having to see pre-qualifying. It shows the strength of the whole series.
Oh, it does indeed. You know, it's no longer a race meeting that happens once a year. It's a full year effort. And you've got to be on the pace from the start of the year right through, otherwise you're just going to be right behind the eight ball if you're lucky enough to qualify for Bathurst.
Now, the carsales.com car, how did you come about to get that sponsorship firstly and then putting the team together?
I knocked on a few doors and I had some business associates with Carsales, so I followed them up and they were very, very good to come on board for the year. But It started out at the beginning of the year. We were looking to run one EL Falcon with Mewitcher, where the sponsorship was coming, but it came along, and since then we've just grown, and we've got a team together of 12 guys coming to Bathurst. Only two of them are basically full-time. All the rest are just supporters, and have been a very loyal bunch of guys.
Now, the team, I think, is based up in Queensland?
Yes, it is, based in Brisbane.
What sort of costs are involved for that week for you to bring the car, transporter, and then, of course, I would imagine that you're helping out the people who are helping you for accommodation and the like?
Correct. Well, we're housing, you know, we're taking two houses of Bathurst to house all the team, feed them, the transportation. I think we budgeted $120,000 for Bathurst, and that's probably, compared to the HRTs and the like, that's probably their catering money, but that's what we're going to be sort of budgeted for the whole of Bathurst, and afterwards we end up with a car that's got to have a complete engine rebuild, of course, so, you know, there's more money to be spent then at the end of it.
But for sponsors and for yourselves, how did you see this concept with the lights racing together and obviously getting more exposure for your sponsor with the opportunities from Trackside?
Oh, I think that the Invesco board has done a magnificent job putting the Konica series together. It's given guys who don't have the capital nor the time or equipment to run at the front of the Shell series an opportunity to run in their own race and get exposure, which has obviously come through Trackside. But I think next year the Konica series will be bigger and better. One thing a lot of people have been saying to me is the Konica series actually puts on better races than they do in the Shell series. The racing's a lot closer, we're all having a go, and probably not quite as experienced as some of those guys in the Shell series, so we're actually, make a few mistakes, but fight back from those mistakes.
And you've also seen a few different tracks, which are obviously the organisation and Invesco need you to be running at the smaller tracks, because without those tracks, when the government start pulling the street races down because they're too expensive, they've got to have tracks still up and operating for them to come back to.
For sure. I think, Invesco have been smart. We don't run at all the same tracks that the Shell series run at, and that's good for promoters and good for the spectators. We are finding that there is a lap over of crowd from both events, but not everybody who comes to a Konica series would go to a Shell series race, which means we're finding a whole new breed of spectators out there, which is great for the sport and particularly great for our sponsors.
And with the series, four rounds this year, can it expand much more, or is four rounds about as much as the privateers can cope with?
No, next year there's six rounds of the Konica series, and then we're going to have, the top four can go and race in the Adelaide 500. And the top four at the end of the series can do the Queensland 500, and the top eight will do Bathurst.
So it is going to build on itself, as has the Invesco V8 supercars already.
Correct. And I think you'll find, we had an average field of 22 cars this year. I think you'll find next year we'll be having a lot bigger grids. I know that already there's about another five or six cars that are looking to get into the series, and one of them is Leanne Ferrier. She's going to go up from Formula Ford to the Konica series, which I think it can only be good for not only the Konica series, but for motorsport in general, having women come through the ranks.
Now, of course, pairings. A lot of the V8 Lights drivers have managed to snavel some very experienced co-drivers. What about your partnership?
Yeah, my co-driver is a gentleman by the name of Stephen Boyce. Stephen's well-known around the sports sedan circles. He runs a 6-litre Honda Prelude in sports sedans, and in fact a couple of times before, both in 2-litre and V8, so he's got a level of experience that is important when you get a race like Bathurst.
And Craig, for yourself, what is your goals and expectations? Are you looking, one, to finish, obviously, but do you think top 20, or are you thinking top 10?
We're looking, the top 10 is where we should finish, and I would have to say that last year we were running as high as 7th outright for some time. So I think this year, the level of competition is obviously a lot stronger this year, but I think this year we can, late in the afternoon in the top 10, I think that's where we should be aiming. There's going to be a lot of guys going up hard. Nutrition rate will be, I think, reasonably high this year, either because of accidents or putting cars under a lot of strain, because it's no longer a long distance race, it's a 1,000 kilometre sprint. And, you know, who knows, it could even rain this year. If it rains, well, that opens up the Pandora's box again.
Yeah, it does indeed. Now, Craig, for the people out there, the car all season has been a blue with white sign running that says carsales.com.
That's correct. And, for Bathurst, we've got a brand new AU Falcon. We purchased the Dick Johnson car, so we'll be in the latest car as well, which will certainly look the part.
And it'll be probably a big step up for you as well, so obviously the plan is not to be going home anywhere near Friday.
Not at all.
It might be a Friday, but it might be a Friday the following week.
Well, if we win, it'll probably be a Friday 2 weeks' time, yeah.
Craig Harris, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you. I remember speaking to you after that first round when the car was quite heavily damaged and things weren't looking so good, so it sounds like you are geared up not to have any sort of dramas like that and to go through with a top 10 finish.
Thank you. Yes, indeed.
Craig Harris joining us there, and of course the privateers coming back to the mountain are going to be one of the features of next weekend's Bathurst FAI 1000.
That's right, and there'll be plenty of them up there for sure. You know, it's going to be interesting with the pre-qualifying on the Thursday for those guys who are trying to make the final grid. And of course, as we well know, a lot can happen. We've seen it before where during the top 10 runoff on the Saturday morning, something goes wrong and somebody's got an overnight rebuild to make the grid. Or during the Saturday afternoon free practice session, or of course, as we've seen on one occasion, the Sunday morning warm-up has caused headaches for a few
Well, we've actually seen that more than once, because the very first year, about 100 years ago when we did this show, was the first morning practice session at Bathurst. And of course, two HRT cars slammed into each other in that 7 a.m. practice session.
Ah, yes, it's a thing dreams are made of. Yes, I think there's a fellow named Bargwana involved with that. Yeah, young Lions, can't look where he is. Yes.
Bathurst preview time, and of course, there's no doubt it's two Henry supporters versus one Volvo. Dreaming of other days.
I'm dreaming of days when, yeah, you know, when Volvos and Audis and things like that were up there as well. I think that's one of the things that probably I missed from the good old days was the class battles where that you had your, you know, outright class, your 2 litre class, your 3 litre class, and the like, and it was quite interesting always to see how far the little guys could get up the field during the day as the big guys died.
We still have that to some respect with the privateers, like we were just talking about.
They're all driving.
But more so with the 3 hour shootout for the GTP cars. And of course, one of the features was always, and to, not even just because he's a local, but because he was so consistent, Ray Gulson.
Mm.
How many years did that man finish Bathurst and getting top 10 placings in cars that were certainly past their use-by date, just built strong, and certainly could go across the top of the mountain as good as anyone.
Well, that's right, and this is an interesting thing too, that still they were doing some calculations last year on the times that Jim Richards and Ricard Rydell did in their Volvo across the top of the mountain. It's from, you know, actually when you get to the top of the mountain, across the top of the mountain until you arrive at Forest Elbow, and the time across the top for the Volvo was comparing to the V8 supercars quicker.
Gee, if they just got rid of the run up the hill and down the hill, gee, they'd be in with a show.
Yeah, that's right. It
just got rid of the mountain.
Yeah.
Or just kept it all on the mountain.
But just what it goes to show, it's just the handling. It's the handling and brakes of those small cars is just where it used to be. And that thing where I say, I started
off. Well, that's why Cortina could race with a Dodge Phoenix.
That's what I say. I started off with Peter Williamson way back when, first man with race cam, and that was where he did it. You know, it was all across the top of the mountain.
And now it's Channel 10, first with colour. Last in ratings, first with colour. Peter, tell us how Henry is going to mount the mountain.
I think clearly the favourite amongst the Ford ranks, and probably an equal favourite outright, will be the Paul Radisich and Jason Bright car. Showed a lot of strength last year, a little bit of bad luck there that threw that away for them. They've shown a lot of speed lately with their latest car out of the workshop. They're going to be one definitely to watch, and if I had to put money on it, that's probably where I'd go it. The heart, of course, is with Seaton, but that's probably a little silly.
Well, Actav is right here, and they take trifectas. You're not getting off that easy.
A trifecta?
On the great race.
Okay, a trifecta.
I'll tell you, I missed it 1 year. I went Ludwig in the Moffat ANZ Sierra, Longhurst, and I can't remember who I had down for third, but with a half an hour to go, I had the trifecta. With 15 minutes to go, I had the trifecta. With 5 minutes to go,
I had nothing. I had second and third, finishing first and second, because the first place car that I'd picked was smoking, billowing off at the...
Well, that's what Bathurst is all about, isn't it? It's not just a race, it's the drama and all the things that go wrong that makes it enjoyable.
Do you know how much that trifecta paid?
Tell us, Craig.
It was about $300 because the wind pool wasn't that big.
Yeah, well, you get that.
Still, $300, it would have been better in my pocket than anyone else's.
Mm. Well, if I look at the Ford camp, I'd say that the top three chances for Ford come from, I'd say, Paul Rasich, Jason Bright in the Shell Helix Falcon. I think that one, with the current form of those two guys, the top Ford contender there. Second line, I'd say, be Mark Lark and Alain Menu. I think that's going to be a very strong pairing and, again, a good car. My outside bet in the Ford camp, if he can throw the hoodoo and what have you that's hitting in the past, same for his co-driver, Brad Jones and Thomas Mazira. About time that Brad did something.
About time Thomas did something.
Yep. And if we go to the Holden side, HRT, I'd say Craig Lowndes, Mike Scaife, they're trying to do, of course, for Mike the championship. Richards, Murphy in the Kmart Commodore, they'd be another one of the key runners there. And Larry Perkins, of course, Russell Ingall, they'll be the other in the Commodore runners. So things are looking quite interesting there.
All right, now, this was supposed to be Colin's question. Why is Holden going to win, and why is Craig Lowndes going to throw his off the mountain when he's riding with Scaife? The answer to that is, why not?
Who knows? Why would he do something like that? You know, I think...
Because he can't run at Adelaide, there's reason number one, because the bastards have been screwing him all year with not only responsibility in the team, but with marketing and promotion. There's three good reasons.
Craig, tell us what you really think. I think really that the last thing Craig Lowndes would do is want to leave a team under a cloud, and being the true racing professional that he is, I'm sure that he can probably find a better way to do it.
Well, as we spoke of earlier, if you do something really dumb, will the sponsors sue you?
That's right. And, of course, he's got to keep his nose clean. Because the thing is, too, his marketability, if he wins when he goes to the new team, is increased if he's going as the reigning Bathurst champion.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And also it makes him second in the championship rather than third. Because if he wins compared to Tander, and Tander doesn't finish in the good place, because that'll move Lowndes up at second in the championship.
All right. Triple SFM continues with the sport after this ad break. Tutty, the king with softball and baseball, and unfortunately that got rained on quite severely this weekend. And then Ralph with the soccer scene, followed by the Chet Show, and I will look now and find out that Sunday night sessions as well. Thanks, King. And thanks, everyone, for joining us. Don't forget, you can join me on Sunday morning sport, 6 till 9 next Sunday morning, and hopefully both you chaps will be up bright and early to tell us what's going on at the mountain, because I haven't planned for anything else.
Yes, we'll bring you a couple of interviews and reports live from Bathurst before that kicks off.
All right. And Colin, hopefully if I can get up to the mountain this year, I'll transport ways, we'll see what we can organise.
We'll drive for interviews. We'll ride for interviews. Colin Ford, Ben Norton, thanks for joining us tonight. We apologise for the Chris Konomaki interview, but as you can see, it was a pretty packed show. We leave you now with the news that Tommy Mackinnon has won his third Rally Australia today.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple SFM Canberra via Comrade Sat, with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.